This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Ticket to Ride, the show that takes you places while you remain firmly in your seat on BFM 89.9. I'm your host, Azura Rahman, and this week we take you on the ultimate pilgrimage with our traveller, Bob Tan, with his journey to Jerusalem. Stay tuned till the end of the show. We'll then take you through some tips for you to plan your next holiday to Jerusalem in Israel. There are few places on earth that is as contested, conflicted, and complex as Jerusalem. Founded during the Mesopotamian times and is what is one of the oldest cities in the world, it has been destroyed at least twice, besieged 23 times, attacked 52 times, and captured and recaptured 44 times. As the one geographical site that is the crossroads of the three Abrahamic religions, it is also a site of reverence for the billions of its faithful. From the Dome of the Rock to the Western Wall and the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, there is nowhere else like it that can showcase the Muslim, Christian and Jewish faith and also the nature and observances of its people. It is also, quite simply, a place of huge historical significance with structures dating back thousands of years, preserved and still in use. In this context, any visitor to Jerusalem automatically becomes one of undoubted privilege, with access to sites and life-changing experiences as old as time in a highly polarized setting. Our traveller this week, Bob Tan, has been privileged to do so nine times over.
I first went in 1996. It was part of a pilgrimage group, a small one. I must say that I was not very religious, if you like, but I followed. And it really knocked my socks off. You know, I mean, the place really is unique, I would say. Jerusalem and Israel, what we would call the Holy Land, is unique. It cannot fail but touch you. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. You get to see some of the things there that are not so pleasant. But generally, the spiritual connection that the place has, it really is a Holy Land.
Malaysian passport holders have long known that Israel is the one country that has been off-limits to our citizens. However, contrary to popular belief, Malaysians of Muslim and Christian faith are allowed to visit Jerusalem for pilgrimage purposes. Malaysia's absence of diplomatic relations does mean that any incidents while visiting Israel may cause difficulty in extraction, as the nearest consulate would be in Amman, Jordan. Also, as a Malaysian citizen, you would still need permission from the Foreign Ministry to make your visit to Israel. If you are interested, it is best to contact the Ministry directly for more advice. Bob shares his personal experience on the ins and outs of the administrative process.
Our government allows people to go for pilgrimages. So they would allow Christians and Muslims. The Foreign Ministry would allow, but you must apply to them, saying that I want to go for a religious purpose. I'm bringing only Christians, going with a spiritual director, a priest or a pastor, and that we are going for a specific number of days, and we must tell them exactly where we are going, who we are going with, and the purpose, of course, is a pilgrimage. It takes about 3 months to apply. And then when you go in, you must go in as a group. They don't allow individuals, and you must come out as a group. So I do tell my fellow travellers, whatever you do, please do not die on me. I'll get lost in Jerusalem.
Travelling via coach from Amman, the point of entry is typically through the south of Israel at the King Hussein border crossing, also known as Allenby Bridge. Crossing over can take well over an hour thanks to the rigorous security employed by the Israeli border police and the number of people leaving and entering.
It's a big crossing because a lot of the local people use that crossing. That area is not developed because it is still like a no man's land. It really is. You see soldiers everywhere. A bit disconcerting. You know, you really see soldiers with machine guns. Security is very, very strict. Really make you go through all your belongings and all that. And you wait. And then when you cross, they don't stamp on your passport. They will stamp on a piece of paper. And then they give it to you. And if you like, in fact, now they actually throw the piece of paper away. Do not take pictures. Do not make them angry with you. But they're very professional.
Once through Allenby Bridge, the first impression that one would get of Israel is the West Bank. Controlled by the Palestinian authorities, the slim landlocked area forms the bulk of the Palestinian territories. One can't pass without considering the difficulties of the area, and you may even just catch a glimpse of the Israeli West Bank barrier that separates much of the Palestinians and the Israelis today. As a traveller, you are free to visit sites within the locale, with its city Jericho being a popular stopover, particularly for Muslim pilgrims keen to visit the mosque and maqam of Prophet Musa. Bob shares his observations of the West Bank and the palpable change once you approach Israeli-held Jerusalem.
I think it's a little bit sad, but the West Bank, the area controlled by the Palestinian Authority, is really not so well developed, while the Israeli side is very developed. So it almost feels like crossing from Asia to Europe, and you are like just across the road, so you can see. But the problem, of course, is always water. There's not enough water in the Palestinian side, and this is actually the fault of the authorities. On the other side, the development, when you cross over, it really feels like you are in Europe.
The old city of Jerusalem is dominated by Temple Mount with its glittering cap of the Dome of the Rock. In fact, it is likely that it is the Golden Dome that will be the first thing that catches your eye, presiding as it were over the entire city. The old city itself is then divided into Muslim, Jewish, Christian and Armenian quarters, giving a clue into the city's main inhabitants. As such, it is a place that is accompanied in equal parts by the sound of church bells, the call of the muezzin and the sound of the shofar, as well as the smells of the spices from the souks and incense from the church. You are expected to dress modestly, at the very least to reflect the conservative values of the dwellers of the old city. Bob shares more.
Muslim quarter is almost half, not quite a quarter, it's almost half. And the bazaar and the souk is in the Muslim quarter. The Jewish quarter has a lot of upmarket shops and fancy little coffee places. And then you've got the two Christian quarters. Armenian quarter is also a Christian quarter, where the site of Christian sites are. And then the city is dominated by a place called the Platform, which is where the old temple was built, and where now the Dome on the Rock is, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And on one side, you've got what they call the Western Wall. In the old days, they called it the Wailing Wall. And that is the holiest site for the Jews, or people who practice Judaism.
Considering that Temple Mount is home to some of the holiest sites in Judaism, Islam and Christianity, it is a place of innate peace, despite the conflicting interests. One of its biggest draws is the Western Wall, and is the holiest place where Jews are permitted to pray. It has been traditionally called the Wailing Wall, referring to the practice of Jews weeping at the site over the destruction of the temples. Today, people of all faiths are permitted to visit the site, with the caveat of being dressed modestly, with men wearing the Jewish skullcap, also known as the yarmulke.
They separate the sexes, the men on the left, the women on the right. The wall is actually the western wall of the original Temple of Solomon. You can see different sizes of stone from the different building periods. And then at the side, there's a little bit of a cave where they keep the books. It is a holy place. You will see people who will go to the wall and just put their head against the wall. It's a wall, for goodness sakes. But to them, it is a religious experience. The look of ecstasy on their faces, especially for tourists or people who come, you know, not Israelis, Jewish people from over the world, they will come and they just put their head against the wall. Sometimes I do feel intrusive, but for me, at least I want to see and understand the extent of their religious conviction and what they are doing.
For Muslim pilgrims to Jerusalem, the focal point itself is the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, considered to be the third holiest site in Islam after Mecca and Medina. The Dome of the Rock is considered the jewel of Temple Mount and one of the most enduring symbols of the city. It also happens to be the site where it is believed that the Prophet Muhammad ascended to heaven during Isra and Mi'raj. Inside, lying centrally under the 20-metre-high dome and ringed by a wooden fence, is the rock from which it is said that Muhammad began his ascension to heaven. According to the Quran, the stone also wanted to join him in heaven and began to rise from the earth, and Muhammad pushed the stone down with his foot, leaving a footprint on the rock, which is still visible in one corner. The Al-Aqsa Mosque sits alongside, and as far as Moscow, it is stripped from grandeur despite its immense significance. It is modestly built with a grey-coloured lead dome and until recently was open to visits from people of all faiths. Bob managed to make a visit before the ruling that forbade non-Muslims from visiting the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
The building is nondescript. It is a rectangular building, full stop.
Big and rectangular.
As a building, as a mosque, really, really nothing much. It's just right. the importance of the place to worship there, to go there and pray. That would be your visit for a Muslim, the pilgrimage to Jerusalem. So I've been inside as well. But now, after the recent problems, they do not allow non-Muslims to go in. And we are only on the outside in the garden. They call it the platform. And you see people, a lot of people milling around, just chilling, for want of a better word, but just to be in the presence, which is also the same as the Western Wall. You will see a lot of people, they will tie something on their head and on their arm, and they will just read the scriptures, sit in a chair and like be in the presence.
One thing that you just can't escape during your time in the Old City is the clear military presence of security forces.
Security is very, very strict. They really make you go through all your belongings and all that. We do tell them what and what not to bring and all. And then you queue up and you wait. And then when you cross, they don't stamp on your passport. If you have an Israeli stamp on your passport, you have a problem going to another Arab country. They will stamp on a piece of paper. And then they give it to you. And if you like, in fact, now they actually throw the piece of paper away. Not even clipped onto your passport. Well, the Israeli authorities are quite strict. They don't like maybe drugs or material that they are not happy with, things like that. But it's not so much for us, as I said, because the crossing is also the local people use it to cross. So they are quite strict about them. It is more the process, especially going from the Jewish site to the Muslim site. They make you go through metal detectors. They make you go through, they close it every now and then. You can't move in, you can't move out. You see, again, soldiers everywhere. In full riot gear, in full helmet and shields. It's, you know, there's always a presence of the military. I suppose, you know, our recent history has shown that it has happened. That's why they are so security conscious. The big mantra for the Jewish or the Israeli people is that we have a right for self-protection. They keep saying this, but they use it sometimes as an excuse.
As for Bob, being of the Christian faith, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was his focal point. For the past 16 centuries, Christian pilgrims have arrived at this spot from every corner of the globe, with the tears and prayers of the pilgrims sanctifying it. The church is built on the site that is considered by Christians to be where Jesus was nailed to the cross, died and was resurrected, and is constantly packed with tourists and pilgrims. The church was built 300 years after the crucifixion, and just like the Al-Aqsa Mosque, it is also far from regal in appearance, despite its holy status.
It's old and dingy. Yes. And actually rather poorly maintained.
But, you know, you think of churches like the Vatican, big, grand, full of gold, and this place is not.
You actually, even the door, you go in, feels like you're going through a side door. And the church is surrounded by buildings, so you cannot see the whole church in itself.
You cannot see. And inside is very dark and dingy. And they've got all the little chapels. And because, you know, among the Christians, there are very many different sects, if you like. You've got the Orthodox, the Latin Roman Catholic, the Armenian, the Coptic and all that, and everything else in between. So each of them have a little chapel. So they would have a service there taking turns. For example, if it's the Russian Orthodox or the Greek Orthodox, then their priests will be conducting the ceremony. And then we, say a Roman Catholic, should not attend. You can see, you can observe, but then, you know, you leave it to them. And then your turn comes. All right, everybody out. Next.
The seemingly divisive timetable of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, as described by Bob, is thanks to the many custodians of the church, which historically has led to amusing circumstances, including the famous immovable ladder that has been in place since 1757 and is a testament to the enduring exchanges between the different custodians. Bob shares the story behind the guardian to the front door of the church.
There's an interesting story I must tell you. I told you that the Christian sects squabble among each other. So then the Sultan, the Ottoman Sultan, said, okay, enough. I'm going to give the key to the main door to an Arab family. And up till now, that family holds the key. Every morning he will come and open the door. And every evening, he will come and close the door. There's a little ceremony. They will close it. They will lock it. The leather is pushed in. Some Catholic Franciscan monks would stay inside. And they are the only ones that are inside during the night. But if anything happens, they actually cannot get out. There's only one way in and one way out.
The church itself is believed to hold the site of the tomb of Jesus Christ.
You know, the tradition has said that Jesus was buried in a cave. This tomb is not in a cave. It is, well, like a marble block, if you like.
and they excavated around it and they put a dome on the top. The tomb is very small. The inside of it, I've been inside, it's actually just two little rooms. But it is a tradition that it is on top of the actual tomb. And in fact, they excavated it last year for the first time in how many hundred years, where they actually dug down and they found a plaque at the bottom going back to the Crusader time saying that this is the tomb of Christ. So it really is probably the place. It is dark and only lit by candles, but it really feels holy. It really does. Because of the big queues, of course, you're in there for maybe 10 to 20 seconds if you're lucky. You know, you go in there, you kneel there and you just touch it, you know. But it really gives you a sense of wonderment. And you feel the people around you having the same feeling. That is the wonderful thing.
The Old City, however, is not just about holy sites. With many structures that date back to biblical times, it has plenty to offer the history buff as well.
Yeah, you can see the Tower of David. You know, King David is the one who originally built the first city of Jerusalem. You can see the wall that was built by the Ottoman Turks. You can see the cemeteries that were there, going back to the time of, again, King David and King Solomon. This one, you're talking of 1000 BC. So we are talking of 3,000 years ago. And then, you know, the tomb of David and of his son. And then there's Mount of Olives. You see, the geography is still there, you know. It's in the Bible. You know, they talk about Jesus walking down the Kedron Valley. And the Kedron Valley is still there. You know, Mount of Olives. It's still there. There's still olive trees on that hill.
Jerusalem, though, is really a city of two halves. While the old city is dominated by its history and religious significance, the new city is youthful, vibrant, and filled with all the markers of a modern global city, from hipster cafes and even a McDonald's.
A lot of people think Jerusalem is the Dome on the Rock, it's the Western Wall. That only forms 10% of what Jerusalem really is. Jerusalem is a big, modern city. It is like a city in Europe. There are not so many very big high-rise buildings. They have the Knesset, which is their parliament is there. They have big museums, they have big performance places. They have squares where it tends to be a little bit sandstone colour. Very hip people will go there and drink and coffee and other things. Drinking of alcohol, except for among the very pious Jews, is very acceptable and accepted and a very common pastime. People know how to party. Shops and little malls and little coffee houses at the side. A very modern city.
But even the modern new city can't shake off the history of Jerusalem. Bob shares his favourite museums, starting with the Hershey Kiss-shaped Israel Museum.
You see, they discovered fragments in Qumran and they were hiding it actually when the Romans came and destroyed Jerusalem. So they discovered it in the 1940s, and they built. And then there were copper scrolls and there was leather scrolls which had passages from the Bible and also passages from the way of life at that time. So they preserved it and they kept it into this museum. And these things are probably 2,000 years old. Now, of course, the Holocaust Museum, a little bit of a somber place, if you like. Actually quite well done. There is one that struck me where it's actually like in the dark. And as you walk in, they will flash images of the camps and they will read the names of people who died in the camps. I thought that was quite interesting.
Despite its difficult history and current state of affairs, Bob's many visits to Israel has given him an appreciation of its people and the struggles faced by them and the Palestinians alike.
Actually, they're all the same. We are all the same. We are people of this world. Yes, the conflict is very fierce. I really wish I can see a resolution in my lifetime, but honestly, I do not think so. Not every Israeli citizen is a Jew. There are Muslims, there are Christians, and everybody's earning a living, everybody's living life as it is. Life continues. I mean, they wish there could be improvements, of course, but life continues. You know, even in the West Bank, when you go to Jericho and all that, yeah, it's like a town, you know. There are still markets, there are still people selling fruit by the roadside. There are shopping malls, you know, there are nightclubs, there are bars, there are coffee places to hang out. You know, a guy that I use a lot, his name is Rami, he's Israeli citizen, but he's Palestinian and he's Christian. And he's happy to be an Israeli citizen. Even for him, he says, yeah, my children go to school, I get a chance to go to a good school, I can earn a job, I earn a living, I work, I have a place to stay. But those are concerns, I think, that before all of us.
Jerusalem is on the proverbial bucket list for the faithful and travellers alike, and for most of it, it is a journey that, as cliched as it sounds, is once in a lifetime. For Bob, the frequent visitor, despite the dangers and the complexities it presents, Jerusalem is unforgettable and as such, simply can't be limited to a one-off experience.
You know, this is strange. We always go to the same places and the same sites. But every trip I go, I learn something new. I see something different. I see something new. Whether it's from the religious point of view, from the touristic point of view, the historical point of view, I learn something new. I think for many people, I say, oh, if there's one trip that I must do in my life, this is it.
And that was Bob Tan with his take on his journey to Jerusalem. Don't forget to log on to our Facebook page on Ticket to Ride, BFM 89.9, or follow us on Instagram on BFM Radio for a more visual guide of his trip. After the break, though, we'll be going through some tips and deals for our next holiday. But before that, here's Jerusalem of Gold by Naomi Shemer on Ticket to Ride, BFM 89.9. It's Ticket to Ride and I'm Azura Rahman with your travel tip. The best time to visit Jerusalem is from April to May and October to November when the weather is mild and the traffic is smooth to get around. Nonetheless, do double check the dates to make sure it doesn't coincide with the Jewish major celebrations, as increase of visitors will also mean an increase in the prices for hotels. Getting around the attractions within the Old City is normally done by foot, but if you're planning to visit a place that is further out, it's advisable to grab a taxi, as the bus systems can be confusing to the first-time tourist. In the markets, it is best to use cash, as instances of credit card fraud is high. And that's our very last show on Ticket to Ride, and I hope you've enjoyed our journeys together for the past 2 years with me, Azura Rahman. If you'd like to get more details on our guest trip, do log on to Facebook and like the Ticket to Ride BFM 89.9 page, or get more details on our Instagram account on BFM Radio. And now to round us off, here's Jerusalem by the Hoppers. It's Azura Rahman on Ticket to Ride for the very last time on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.